What kinds of jobs would you like to see created in the district?
I'd like to see jobs that pay a living wage, one that will allow a family to do more than just make ends meet. I really want to see jobs that help families progress. And I would like to see us investing in jobs that actually help make our country better and also make ourselves more attractive to business investments here in District 17. I would really like to see our roadways and our bridges fixed. I think expanding our two-lane highways to four-lane highways would be a lot better, could increase tourism, help areas all over the district. So I'd really like to see jobs that are going to work on focusing on repairing our infrastructure here in District 17.
Now, what role do you think the federal government should play in creating these jobs?
Well, two ways. For private companies, we need to create an environment that is business-friendly. You know, good tax breaks, good subsidies for those who want to create jobs for Americans here in District 17. Tax breaks for those who bring jobs that they have sent overseas to bring them back here so that their businesses can thrive, and as well as to push Congress forward into investing in our country and having the budget there to repair our infrastructure.
What foreign policy issues do you see as paramount for the U.S.?
The biggest one that I see is our trade deficits. I want to see more fair trade instead of free trade. Two countries that I worry with our trade is South Korea and China. With China, the trade deficit continues to rise. We buy so many of their economically priced products, which gives them more American dollars, which then they can keep their American dollars and invest in our nation. But we need them to start buying more from us. We cannot let this deficit continue. Also, we need to make sure that whoever we have trade with, they need to treat their workers in a humane fashion that pays them fairly. China and South Korea. Perfect example would be China, where the iPhone is made. They have safety nets around their buildings so employees don't jump off the buildings and kill themselves. Why would we be trading with companies or trading with countries that allow this type of behavior to happen? With South Korea, only 35% of the products that we're buying from South Korea have to be made in South Korea. So anything else could be coming from North Korea, which also promotes prison labor and enforced labor, giving them an economic advantage off of our dollars, and I cannot stand for it. I am a big supporter of labor. My parents come from labor, and I believe in treating employees fairly and paying them a fair wage, not forcing people to work. And this is causing a major issue with our trade deficit because they can create products at a cheaper price at the expense of human life. And I don't agree with that, and I think that's a huge foreign policy issue that we have to look into.
What course should the U.S. take on domestic energy?
We should be leading the way in renewable energy sources. Biodiesels, flex fuels, wind power. We should be leading that so we can cut our dependency on foreign oil. And I think that we have, especially here in District 17, we have a lot of great colleges, a lot of great universities. We have the educated workforce needed to do research and development for renewable energy sources. And we're seeing the success that Iowa has done, especially with their alternative energy sources. And we need to focus on that. And we also need to reward companies that are focusing on renewable energy sources and giving them the subsidies and maybe cutting back on the big oil subsidies like Barack Obama suggested, because part of those subsidies are so that they can invest in research into alternative energy sources, and they're not. So let's take that money, let's put it into our renewable energy sources to cut our dependency on foreign oil.
What's your position on right-to-work laws?
I support labor, and I am against right-to-work laws. States that have right-to-work laws have a pay that is less than average in the rest of the country. When union membership declines, so does average pay. Also, right-to-work states have a higher death rate than non-right-to-work states. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the rate of workplace death is nearly 53% higher in right-to-work states. So I oppose that. I think that union labor helps American workers earn a fair wage. It also protects them and creates safe working environments for the American workforce. Believe it or not, I used to be a welder. That's how I got through college, was welding, and I worked in a shop that was non-union. And when there was a leaky roof and there was water near our welding stations, we were still expected to go to work. And this is here in East Moline. And we all refused. Why would we combine electricity and water at the same time to weld? We can't do that. Well, they said, well, fine, if you don't want to work in these conditions, you can go home. And all of us did. We weren't going to risk our lives. But that's what happens when workers are not allowed to organize themselves and fight for safer working conditions and fight for fair wages. So I do oppose right-to-work laws.
What should the relationship be between governments and their employee unions?
Sure, I think they need to work together, as always, for fair wages, for fair pensions, and as well as fair working conditions. And both need to work together. As we saw in Wisconsin, if you get the people angry, they're going to let you know about it. And I really support what happened in Wisconsin. I'm really glad that the people rose up and said, hey, we need to work together. You need to know what we need. And we know the job that needs to get done. We'll do it the best of our ability. And they do. But there needs to be a fair and working relationship with government and their unions.
What do you think the federal government should do, or how far should it go in dealing with abortion and abortion rights?
Sure. With abortion, the only two people that should ever be discussing abortion is a woman and her doctor, period. That's it. Those are the only people involved with that conversation as far as I'm concerned.
How about the role of the federal government, if any, in regarding marriage?
That's a very good question, and I'm going to try to make it as short as possible, but in America, if you are a man who chooses to marry and finds someone who wants to marry you as well and can give consent, you're allowed that freedom. A woman is allowed to do the same. Now, it's a major civil rights issue when the government says that you have to marry someone of the opposite sex, because it's a personal choice of who someone wants to spend the rest of their life with. And if two men or two women choose to spend the rest of their lives together, that is their choice and that is their right, because as individuals, they are allowed to choose who they want to spend the rest of their life with. Now, I think that if we do not want to call it marriage, fine, don't call it marriage. But we still need something that recognizes that two people are together so they can share benefits like insurance and Social Security. It is their choice. It's a civil rights violation by putting government involved with who someone chooses to spend the rest of their life with.
What do you see as the right approach to reducing the national debt?
Cut spending, increase revenue. Make sure that all Americans are paying their fair share of taxes. I think that when a millionaire like multi-billionaire Warren Buffett is paying less in taxes than his staff, we have an issue. We also need to cut our spending. We need to make sure that our agencies are running as efficiently as possible. I don't feel that our federal employees should deserve their automatic raises every year just because they put in their time in. I think it should be based off of performance. And I also don't encourage government agencies to spending all their budget. I know they have a budget, and often at the end of the year they have extra money left, and they purposely try to spend it to get rid of it so they don't lose funding next year, and I think that's wrong. So we need to run as efficiently as possible with our government, and we need to increase revenue, and we also need to close these corporate loopholes which prevent major corporations from paying their fair share of American taxes.
And Greg, what sets you apart as the best choice for the nomination?
I am the people. I am the best representative of the people. As I work by day and I campaign at night. I cannot believe in a candidate that is a professional full-time politician and this is the only thing that they do. These positions were created so men and women could work in their communities and then go off to Washington to serve their community's needs. Somewhere along the way, we've gotten it backwards where you have to work, be fully committed to a campaign, which now takes 9 months. And I think the average person doesn't have a chance to just leave everything that they're doing to focus on a campaign. So I am the people's candidate who works by day, campaigns by night and weekend. I am a true working class candidate, child of labor. I understand the needs of my community. I have always been working in my community, and I have always worked in the service of others. I am not a professional politician. I am one of the people out there trying to represent our working class in Washington. And the bottom line is I want to be the megaphone on the floor of Congress for the 99% of this country who has been ignored for far too long.
And anything else do you see as important for the district, the state, or the nation, Greg?
You know, economic inequality is a big problem that I'm seeing in the nation. As a grassroots candidate, I can't tell you how many times I've heard, Greg, you can't win, you don't have any money. Or, Greg, why are you even bothering, you don't have any money. And that's wrong. We're putting too much faith in money, and we're throwing too much money into politics, which keeps the average citizen from even running. Your financial state also determines the type of education that you have. If your family can afford a nicer home, perhaps in one of the suburbs of Chicago, you might have access to a planetarium, an Olympic-style swimming pool, and a pond where you can practice fly fishing and gym class. Now, if you cannot afford to live in one of those suburbs and attend those school districts, you might end up in a rural part of Illinois where a school is begging for a new roof because it's leaking water onto the students. And so I think that's a major economic inequality. And finally, money is going to determine the voice that people or agencies have in their government. If you're an average citizen and you are opposed to something that our government is doing, you might get a staff member to listen to you, but nothing will get done. But if you have a lot of money, like all these lobbyists, for some reason their voice weighs heavier. So nationally, we are in a crisis of economic inequality, because economic inequality is determining whether or not you're allowed to participate in your political system, in your political democracy. It's determining what type of education you're going to get, and it's going to determine the strength of your voice on your elected officials. So that's an issue that I'm seeing nationally that we really have to put a lot of attention to.